Good afternoon. Today is Friday. Yes, it is indeed. February 14th. You know what that means. And who better to be with us than our own little sweetheart, Ken Woods, huh?
Very.
You like that?
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about
you didn't see the pitchfork,
hot
huh?
And steamy and smoky stuff on Valentine's Day.
Good.
Yeah.
And oxygen masks. Okay, well, batten down the hatches. Yeah, we'll be back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggy of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Times 313. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ken Woods, but before we do, we'll find an appropriate Valentine's.
Right.
Yeah,
good.
It's taking a while.
Long book.
Yeah, well, okay. Here's a nice one.
All right.
Lucille Harper. It's really not Valentine's-ish, but it's still a nice quote. The nice thing about egotists is that they don't talk about other people.
Yeah, that was good.
Hey, you like that one?
I did like that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and all the Mae West ones, we tried to figure out if they were safe or not.
Yeah, usually not.
No, probably not. So I think we'll probably just kind of peek right there.
Okay.
All right.
That's probably right.
Downhill, yeah, yeah.
Downhill from here.
Yeah, went into Zsa Zsa Gabor, too, so... Oh, boy. So, I guess we probably ought to start with the passing of Vern Cooney. I was trying to talk with, or trying to remember when talking with Dan about who was Vern, when was he fire chief, who else was around him, and kind of got, I guess I must be getting a little old.
A little.
Yeah, well, there was McFarland.
Right.
Okay. McFarland 1 and 2. And yeah, so we had that those transitions. Obviously, yourself in the mix. And who was around Vern? Who were his guys? Is that when Ehler and McFarland were the assistant fire chiefs?
Yeah, So 83 to 94, essentially, it's when McFarland took over. And, you know, most of the current guys we have now, very few actually were around, of course, when Vern was the chief here. But, you know, as I go back and when I took over, the familiar stacks of documents, and you look through and you see Vern's name and a lot of the things that he did and the impact that he had on the organization that carries through today. He was one of the, you know, principal reasons for the automatic aid agreement and for dropping boundaries between the city fire department and the Humboldt Fire District so that the closest fire engine began to respond on calls.
So would that be kind of the first steps towards the consolidation?
Yeah, it really was. Up until that point, it had been very territorial. You didn't, if the call was over the boundary, you didn't cross the boundary. It was almost like armed camp somewhat, I believe, and that's the history I've gotten from it. But this was really a huge step to breaking down those barriers and really providing a higher level of service because, again, when you get the closest engine responding, you get a quicker response and you're able to help people in a much more expedient manner.
So was Vern the first of the new fire chiefs or the last of the old fire chief?
That's hard for me to say. I think, you know, since we have really solidified the consolidation and over the past 2 years and really brought it together. It never would have happened, though, without the steps that those other chiefs, both from the city side and the district side, and the things that the little things they did over the years, which got us to a point where we could make the final leap and follow through with the full consolidation. So, you know, Vern actually obviously had an effect on that. McFarland, Eric Smith,
who?
You know, Dave Gibbs, Glenn Zimmer. You know, you can run down the names, and right. I can look at picture in my mind their pictures on the wall of our stations. And
funny, again, I see them in your chair.
Yeah, I bet. But again, I've got a lot of those documents. There were consolidation studies. There was talk. It didn't happen until the last couple years when it really came together. But each one took a little piece and added a piece to the puzzle to get where we are today.
As you step back, could it have happened any other way?
Boy, timing is everything. Having the right political bodies in place, the right people there, the right mindset with the labor side and the crews, and a willingness to work together, and the culture. Culture is a huge component of the fire service. And, you know, they talk about 150 years of tradition unimpeded by progress for the fire service at times. And sometimes it's like that. And changing that culture is a major step. And it was for us with our consolidation and making it happen. I think, you know, we really focused on taking the best of two cultures, combining it into one, and we were able to do that. But again, we built on what the foundation was laid from others years ago.
Was Vern a good fireman?
Yeah, I know. I never worked with Vern. I didn't have the opportunity to do that. But when you tell stories around the fire station, and everybody does that, yeah, they're positive, good things, and he was, and good chief, and people have good things to say. And even if they didn't know him, it's those firefighters that they've worked with that the stories get passed on down the line.
Now, he was the first chief in the current fire station, wasn't he?
Downtown?
The downtown station, yeah.
I am not sure. I believe it may have been Ray Lay before that.
Okay.
I believe he was the one that had that station built downtown, and it was a similar station from where he came from, Southern California, similar design, and I think he was the one.
Okay. So Vern was probably the first full-term chief that was there.
Yeah, I believe so. Right.
And all of his supporting staff.
Correct.
We'll just leave it there because I know some of the guys are still around.
Yeah.
Right. Don't want to hack them off too bad.
No, we don't want to do that.
I mean, who knows? They might come back down the road.
Yeah, they can still get in the door. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And they know where I live. Right. KINS, News and Information Times 319. We'll be back with more from Ken Woods.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. If you've never been to Eureka's Sequoia Park Zoo, or haven't in a long time, you're in for a treat. Eureka is one of the smallest cities in the nation to have a zoo, and quite a zoo it is. It's among the redwood trees and specializes in a variety of small animals. Many exhibits have been updated, with more on the way. A big favorite is the red panda family. If you think of pandas as black and white, big, and chewing on bamboo, think again. Red pandas are small with reddish coats and white faces. Watch them scamper on their trees. The pink flamingo flock will dazzle you as you pass their pond. There are many more zoo pleasures awaiting young and old alike. There's a cafe and gift shop, too. On Wednesdays, all visitors come in at half price. For days and hours, see their website, sequoiaparkzoo.net. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Humboldt Bay Fire Chief. Might as well throw that out there, too.
Might as well.
Yeah, Ken
just
Woods.
In case.
Yeah, in case anybody's still listening. Some of the different challenges that are out there, Ken, have got to be, well, I don't know. Sometimes overwhelming, sometimes encouraging. The concept of development, okay? Mm-hmm. Yeah, real estate development impacts you guys, okay?
Right.
You've got infill development.
Correct.
Impacts you guys. Yeah. Staff development impacts you guys. All these various things that are out there under this heading of development.
Right.
How do you manage development?
It's a challenge, and part of that, when you talk development, mandates, you know, that are something that we haven't necessarily been focusing on, but now all of a sudden we've got a mandate that we've got to focus on, and it's part of the, again, quote, development of what we should be doing and where we need to go. We really try to partner with other agencies and network to find out what is going on out there, what works and what doesn't work. So if it's our training officer, for instance, he's involved with other training officers around the state, finding out what they're doing, what programs, you know, what type of new strategies and tactics that are occurring. And it's, for us, we don't want to reinvent the wheel every time, of course. And if there's something available that we can implement that's sound and productive, then we want to put it into place. So you talk about training. You talk about then fire prevention and development, and whether it's residential, commercial development and new development. So we have a new brewery going into town, for instance. And
finally! Yay!
Yeah, exactly. And it's something that's going to be a different type structure in a different location for us.
Does it make it easier for you where it's located, or is it more challenging?
It's probably more easier at this point. It's more isolated. The water system is something that we have a hand in developing as far as where we want the hydrants to go. So it's a new project that, you know, we do have a say in what type of fire suppression systems go into those structures. They're the latest, which is always better for us, as opposed to a building in Old Town that's been remodeled 15 times that has 5 layers of roofs on it, old construction.
Oh, you mean the current location?
Yeah.
How much more expensive is that stuff? Or is there an expense associated with that more than the standard run of the mill? Because I would think that there, it could be one way or the other.
No, it's definitely more expensive. And again, when you're dealing with commercial projects of that size, everything is bigger. Whether it's sprinkler systems, you know, whether it's piping and valves that coming into it, number of smoke detectors, number of heads, those types of things. So,
what is the ratio for the sprinklers? I mean, every X number of square feet, X
That's
number.
That's why I have a prevention department that does that. I'm in a
went right over your head, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, that's about it. I can tell you that when they work, and it's great stuff to have.
Good. But nice insight. Yeah. Love that experience there. Yeah.
But development, again, developing new construction and then new building techniques and new building products we're seeing out there, and then take that over now to the suppression side. So we've built this building. We've put in these fire prevention systems. Well, what happens if they fail? What if we do have a fire out there? So we've got a new type of construction. What are our strategy and tactics going to be to deal with, for instance, solar panels on a roof, to deal with metal roofing? You know, you can't use the same type of chainsaw that you'd use on a residential construction roof when you're dealing with a metal roof. So
one time.
Yeah, one time, yeah. And you don't get very far with right. the problem either. Right. So it's a constant juggling battle. Personnel. We have, you know, we had one of our very experienced captains, Dan Salinger, who retired from the department, and bringing people up to replace that knowledge and that experience is tough to do. We've got some great younger folks that are excited, energetic, very competent and capable, yet they still need to be developed. And it's a process we go through, and it's a constant battle, and trying to, you know, keep your fingers in all these different pieces of the pie. It's difficult at times.
Well, it's just because you like pie.
Yeah, that's true. And ice cream.
So, yeah. Some of the strategies, you know, you mentioned about keeping abreast of the new stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Is it tempting sometimes to get too focused on the newest, latest, greatest?
It is.
And not look at, okay, here are the fundamentals. And, you know, something that we used 35 years ago that's kind of gone out of vogue.
Right.
That really makes sense now.
Right.
And bring some of those back also.
Exactly. And yeah, you know, there's a lot of new things. There's a lot of research going into fire behavior, and it's out there. It's cutting edge. There's a lot of magazines that have articles, and it's exciting stuff like you'd see in the medical field. But you can't just jump into that, and particularly here. So where was that study done? What type of construction was it used on? Do we have that type of construction here? Do we have the same equipment that they use to duplicate the study? And it's all those things. And we don't really jump into anything very rapidly. Again, it's talking to our partners in the fire service out there. What's working for them? Have they tried this new stuff? Does it work? We may give it a try and decide we don't want to go there, and it's not something we want to even attempt to do.
Not with the chainsaw. KINS, News and Information Times, 3:30.
A decade of difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast. This is Jim Ritter with Humboldt Live in the Arcata High School Career and College Center. Do you have life and work experiences that could be of benefit to our local youth? We're recruiting community members to mentor and share ideas with our middle and high school students. Please call me at 839-5114 for more information. The Decade of Difference, making a real difference for the future of the North Coast.
Good afternoon. Today, no, it isn't. It's still Valentine's Day. You're still here, dude.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, okay. Ken Woods is here.
Sorry.
Yeah, I can find another quote. Hey, second half of the show might be better than the first half.
Start over.
Oh,
don't
just
count on it, though.
No, no. Yeah. Considering the material we have to work with,
right. Yeah, I know.
We better stay with the tar paper.
Right.
Yeah. The rains we've been having the last couple of days. Now, right. I know it's been big. I know Delaware County's been getting creamed.
Mm-hmm.
Is this enough to at least knock down the concern that you had whenever it was you were here last time?
December,
with the yeah. with the potential of fire in the hills and in the wildland areas,
we're getting some decent rainfall now, so that it has taken the edge off what we were looking at in December, and it's an improvement for us. Cal Fire, in fact, had hired additional 10 firefighters, I think, towards the end of the year, and this rain has really helped though, and it does soften the blow and the potential for some of the problems for us. And really, the fires we do get because of the moisture, and they're not going to run at the same level that they would have prior, being as dry as it was.
At what point do you go, whew?
Yeah, we never here go, whew, because of the structure fires that we have.
Well, I mean with the grasslands.
With the wildland, yeah. We don't ramp up as much as other parts of the country with the wildland and, of course, the valley area, because we don't have the same types of flashy fuel with some of the grasses and things in the immediate area here. So it's not as big a concern for us all year round. But, you know, we have wildland gear, which is separate equipment that the guys wear, and we'll be taking that off the engine, and the crews won't even be carrying it with them anymore because of the rain we've had and the really reduced potential for any wildland-type incidents.
That sounds like, whew, to me.
Yeah, no, not as
if
much.
If you're pulling the gear off the trucks,
it's
okay, there's a little relaxing going on.
There is in that sense, yeah. But the wildland fires that we normally deal with around in and around town are not as potentially problematic as you'll find in the valley area, where, you know, you put a bit of wind on the grass and it's running at 30 miles an hour and you're burning 300-400 acres in a couple hours. We don't have that same potential.
That would be impressive. I mean, yeah, for anybody to see that.
Those,
have you
those
really?
Oh yeah, when I worked down in Sacramento Valley area, it was near Fairfield, common that in a couple hours we'd burn 300-400 acres because of the wind and just the dry vegetation that was out here. But, you know, you could be driving along at 20 miles an hour trying to chase the head of the fire and you'd never catch it because it was just flowing right along ahead of you. Yeah, it's impressive.
So how do you stop something like that?
Usually wait till it gets to, the wind dies down, or if you can get a big, a river or something in the way like
I
that.
See, that would be one of the old strategies.
Correct. Yeah, aircraft help tremendously, but again, it's mostly with those types of fires, you're chasing the perimeters of it and trying to work your way for the front, and the front is going to go where it wants to go.
Will they kind of grow like an amoeba would and just kind of spread all over, or does it have a head and a tail?
No, it'll grow in all directions, and it'll continue to move with the wind in one direction, but it'll continue to grow outward, consuming the fuel, so it gets bigger and bigger as it continues to go that way. And again, you put a decent amount of wind on it, you know, 20 miles an hour wind on a fire, you're really pushing that thing along.
Doesn't do that in the woods. I mean, the ones we have around here, it's a completely different critter.
Redwoods, no, it really is much different animal. And, you know, the fire they had last year in Yosemite, it got in the woods, and it was different type of trees and running through those trees. And, again, it was that wind factor, and it starts to create its own wind. But it begins to move very quickly. But we don't have that same potential right here on the coast with our redwood trees.
Or ash or scrub brush or weed
it's
trees.
Cooler and we don't have, you know, the humidity is not the same as on a day where it's over 100 degrees in the valley and those types of things.
KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:40. We'll be back with more from Ken Woods.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions, 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass, 7 p.m. Spanish Mass, and on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time, 3:44. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Ken Woods. So what else is cooking? If you're not doing fires... Well, you don't have the concern of fires.
Yeah, we finished some new training in water rescue. Our water rescue team is now certified by the United States Lifeguard Association, and that was really a big step for us. Having a water rescue team with the amount of water we have is a huge improvement, and it's a huge benefit for us.
That explains the wood panels on the sides of the fire trucks now?
And the
surfboards up on top? Yeah, okay, good.
Yeah, and actually there are surfboards on top of two of the engines now.
Really?
Yeah, there are. And those are they're rescue boards.
Okay.
I must say
who are the surfer boys?
Yeah, we've got about 11 of them, and they're specially trained. They wear special equipment, dry suits. They're trained to not only make, you know, surface level rescues on the water, but they can do some limited underwater rescue. We don't have a dive team, but it's really an enhanced level of training that these guys have gone through recently to be certified. They've gone out and they've practiced in the Trinity River, and they're practicing in the bay. Just the other day, they were out in the bay in the cold water in their suits, rescuing each other. And it's really a benefit for the community that though we don't get a lot of water rescues, when you do, we don't want to show up and stand on the sideline and say, I'm sorry, we don't go out there.
So is this to augment the sheriff's marine posse? Is this to augment what the Coasties are able to provide?
It's really a quicker emergency level of rescue that's available. Now, with the sheriff, you know, they have to respond and pick up the boat, and then they'll respond out in the boat. The Coast Guard, same thing. They'll primarily respond outside the bay, not inside the bay, on water rescues. So it was kind of a hole that there was just not a ability to effect quality rescues of people, and we filled that with this water rescue team, and we've had some saves out of it.
Now,
here it comes. I get that look.
I know the guys that I know, and I'm thinking of them in Speedos hitting the beach with a surfboard, and rescue is not part of that equation in my head.
Well, Speedos in Humboldt County and fog and 50 degree probably don't work well together.
How do the boys hit the surf and get out if somebody's, let's say, 50 yards offshore or out in the middle of the bay?
They're in a dry suit. number one. Number two, those surfboards, rescue boards, allow them to hang on to that. And then with flippers, they can be across the water very quickly. And you'd be surprised how quickly they can move out to rescue somebody. And they're attached on a line as well, so we can retrieve them and pull them back in. But it's pretty impressive to watch them work in the current out in the bay.
The current is exactly where I was going with this thing, because you got drifts going all over the place.
With the board, the wet dry suits and the flippers, they really can get across that water in a hurry. And we've had some successful rescues already out in the bay.
Not the guys rescuing themselves, but real rescues?
In addition to those. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Is there, there's that kind of need or demand?
There is. And if you remember a few years ago where City of Alameda had someone that was suicidal, that was out in the water, and there wasn't the ability, there wasn't the training for anyone to go out and help them, and it was a... It caused a big problem for the Alameda Fire Department, and they've changed some things since then. We don't want to and didn't want to be in that position where we show up and someone's out in the water and we don't have the equipment or the training to help them. So this has really, again, filled that need and that hole where we have qualified, capable people and the equipment. Where we get there immediately, we're probably going to be one of the first ones there. And we can get out there to those individuals and make the rescue. And if the sheriff's boat shows up or the harbor district, and we can put transfer those people onto the boat out in the water, or else we'll just bring them right back to shore.
Mutual aid. You talked about it when we were talking about Vern in the first segment. Is there mutual aid for this also? Will you guys respond for something in the North Bay or on the west side, or will the other agencies be there and be able to beat you?
The other agencies will most likely be there. Whether they have the capability to effect a rescue or not is different depending on each agency. But again, in those types of situations, if we're traveling a ways travel time, then maybe a boat will get there quicker in that regard to a certain area. But definitely, if someone requests us mutual aid, we're going to respond and we're going to do what we can do to try to help, you know, mitigate that problem as quickly as we can.
With the fireboat that the harbor owns, will they go in that direction and you guys try to catch up to them?
Yeah, absolutely. We notify the harbor district. They will respond with their boat. We'll put our swimmers in the water, and it's a coordinated effort to, you know, do whatever is the best method and equipment to get that person out of the water as quickly as we can.
And then if you need medevac, then the copters will be in from the coasties.
And we could use the Coast Guard helicopters. Exactly. We have our shore-based paramedics, and we'll go from there.
And everybody's starting to train together so that you don't have the boat running over the surfboard and the helicopter trying to pull everybody out.
Yeah, we've done some of that, and we're going to be doing more of that now in the future as well. But getting everybody on the same page and knowing the capabilities and what we can expect from each other is huge.
Any concern about the recreational folks that are out there using the kayaks and things like that? Do they tend to be more knowledgeable on how to keep themselves safe, or do they tend to be the ones that you're going to be looking at trying to pull out?
You get the whole range. You get the novices that get themselves into trouble, whether it's a windy day or an area where they shouldn't be, they're not in the shape, or you get somebody that's very experienced that's not a problem.
Have a good Valentine's Day.
You too. Thanks.
We have a talking shop this afternoon with Ken Woods. Join us Monday afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug some love. See you tomorrow morning.